Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Twisted Tuesdays with the Twisted Sisters. And you never know, maybe a Twisted Mister or two. I hope everyone's doing well, and I hope everyone has a great week to follow. Hey, Pam, how are you tonight?
I am doing great. Looking forward to hanging out with you and other cool poets and, you know, delving into the poetry. Life is good. It got up to, like, 57 degrees today. You know,
awesome.
So, yes.
Yeah,
how are you doing?
So pretty good. I think we hit around 72 today, which
nice.
Wasn't bad. And tomorrow's supposed to be up around 79. So, you know, spring is finally poking her head through to say hello to everyone. Of course, now next week we might have snow, but, you know, time will tell. You know, it gets crazy like that sometimes.
Yeah.
But 59 sounds cold, but that's actually pretty good for you, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And it's supposed to just keep getting warmer and warmer. So, yep.
That's good.
Yep, that was good. For this time of year, it's warm for us.
Right. Absolutely. I get it. Well, yeah, that's good. So I'll let you know before we get too far that Laurent is on the line. So hello, Laurent. Welcome to the party.
Good evening. How are you, Jean? How are you, fam? Pleasure to be here.
Doing great. Glad you could join us.
Yeah. Pastoral scenes, attraction.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, absolutely.
So, Pam, whenever you're ready, go ahead and tell us about your contest for tonight.
All right. Well, I decided to throw a contest and make it a pre-writes one if people wanted to put something in on topic that had to do with pastoral poetry and art. So I put up a variety of poets and a variety of artists that fell into the pastoral category. To get a general idea about pastoral poems from poemanalysis.com, pastoral poems usually make use of an idyllic setting, one that is completely or almost entirely removed from society. Usually there is a single narrator who is engaging with the mutual landscape in a meaningful way. Farm settings are widely popular within the genre. It actually started out in ancient Greece. One of the first noted pastoral poets was Hesiod, and then he influenced such poets, ancient Greek poets as Theocritus, Virgil, and Horace. Some examples of well-known pastoral poems are The Passionate Shepherd to His Love. I think that's probably one of the most noted, by Christopher Marlowe. The Lime Tree Bower, My Prison, by Samuel Taylor Coleridge, and Ode to Psyche by John Keats. You know, some people say that pastoral isn't necessarily a genre, but more of a mode. But I think personally that's kind of potato, potato, who knows. Pastorals can come in many forms. There's the traditional, but there's also the pastoral ballad or the pastoral elegy. What else was there? There was something else that was of note, or that I thought was of note at least, but I might not be able to find it. Oh, yes, this is the other important thing to note is that oftentimes in the landscape of the paintings or the poetry is used as part of a religious allegory, suggesting that peace and or God can be found within nature. So that's kind of our theme for tonight. So I think it's going to be just an absolutely beautiful night of poetry to delve into.
Very nice. It's a good night for imagery, you know, beautiful imagery.
It is, yes.
That's kind of where I fall in that, that thought process there. That's super excellent. So, okay, you just tell me where you want me to go, and I will do what you say. Well, within reason.
All right. I'll remember that, within reason. All right. So, up first, we are going to start with a classic poem called A Pastoral Ballad by William Shenstone. And our own Arcana Amore was nice enough to make a recording of this poem for us. So whenever you're ready, Jean.
Okay, here we go.
Pastoral ye shepherds, so cheerful and gay, whose flocks never carelessly roam. Should Corydon's happen to stray, oh, call the poor wanderers home. Allow me to muse and to sigh, nor talk of the change that ye find. None once was so watchful as I have left my dear Phyllis behind. Now I know what it is to have strove with the torture of doubt and desire, what it is to admire and to love, and to leave her we love and admire. Ah, lead forth my flock in the morn, and the damps of each evening repel. Alas, I am faint and forlorn, I have bade my dear Phyllis farewell. Since Phyllis vouchsafed me a look, I never once dreamed of my vine. May I lose both my pipe and my crook, if I knew of a kid that was mine. I prized every hour that went by, beyond all that had pleased me before. But now they are past, and I sigh, and I grieve that I prize them no more. But why do I languish in vain? Why wander thus pensively here? Oh, why did I come from the plain, where I fed on the smiles of my dear? They tell me, my favourite maid, the pride of that valley is flown. Alas, where with her I have strayed, I could wander with pleasure alone. When forced the fair nymph to forego, what anguish I felt at my heart. Yet I thought, but it might not be so, 'twas with pain that she saw me depart. She gazed as I slowly withdrew, my path I could hardly discern, so sweetly she bade me adieu, I thought that she bade me return. The pilgrim that journeys all day to visit some far distant shrine, if he bear but a relic away, is happy nor heard to repine. Thus widely removed from the fair, and my vows, my devotion I owe, soft hope is the relic I bear, and my solace wherever I go.
Wonderful read there. Thank you so much, Artana, for recording that classic poem for us. And such a beautiful choice of accompanying background music. I really appreciate that. And Laurent, let's start with your thoughts on this classic poem.
Oh, the poem is timeless, as is the recording. What a wonderful voice he has, and how well he recorded that. I am not familiar with Shenstone's work, a pastoral ballad. Yet it calls to me, reminds me of poems I used to read as a child that my father would not force me to read, but encourage me strongly to read. I really like when forced the fair nymph to forego what anguish I felt at my heart. Yet I thought, but it might not be so. 'Twas a pain that she saw me depart. Just that it's everything that I used to think that poetry was, before I became aware of the beat poets. But to me, this kind of thing was bread and butter, meat and potatoes. Now it doesn't seem out of place, but it doesn't somehow seem to draw a picture of the modern world, but it's wonderful to read.
Oh, I agree. And I know what you mean because, you know, I enjoy all kinds of poetry, and this is definitely one that has a very classic feel to it. And Jean, your thoughts?
Well, you know, I have to agree with both of you. I thought this was a fabulous poem. And not that William needs my, you know, high five on it. But it was so, plus Arcana's voice, it was so easy to listen to and to follow. And it had this very kind of solemn sound and references throughout, but really well done. And it was a great piece to start the day off with, or the night off with, sorry. Forgot where I was. And, yeah, so great choice, Ben. Really well chosen. All right. Mm-hmm. High five, William.
Well, thank you. And, yes, it's a little bit different. It is because of being, you know, a pastoral ballad and because of the form. It's a little more, I think, melancholy than, like, your typical pastoral. But, you know, it still, I thought, fit really well. I thought it was so beautifully written with the classic style language, the rhyme, the flow, and the meter. Great use of such words as what was that, Varschust or something like that. I can't find it now. It was just one of those, just wonderful use of classic language. And when I found this poem, because I thought, now, whose voice would sound really good reading this? And, yes, Rushaf. Since Phyllis Rushafed me a look, I never once dreamed of my vine. May I lose both my pipe and my crook if I knew of a kid that was mine. Wonderful lines, beautifully written. And yes, I immediately thought of Arcana's voice, so I messaged him, and he was more than happy to make a recording. And so that was beautifully done. And, yeah, I thought this was a great example of how a pastoral poem can be written in a different form. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. And with that being said, we will go ahead and move on to the first poem from one of our LNP poets, and that is Spring is in the Air by Damn It Dave. And Laurent, would you give that a read for us, please?
Certainly. Spring is in the air, parody. Spring is in the air, everywhere I look around. Spring is in the air, every sight and every sound. And I know winter's driven me bonkers. I don't know if I'm being wise. But I think that I just may go hiking. It's warm, with no clouds in the skies. Spring is in the air. There are buds upon the trees. Spring is in the air. Hear the buzzing of the bees. And I don't know if I'm merely dreaming. Don't know if it's going to last. But it's something that I must believe in. I hope winter is now in the past. Spring is in the air. Spring is in the air. Oh, ho, 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 ho. Spring is in the air. Feel the warmness of the breeze. Spring is in the air, or is nature just a tease? And I hope that it's not an illusion, for Easter is just round the bend. But my fingers are crossed, and I'm hoping that the winter has come to an end. Spring is in the air. I'll enjoy this lovely day. Spring is in the air, and I hope she's here to stay. And I don't know if I'm being silly for taking my bike for a ride. The day's just too nice not to do it. No reason for staying inside. Spring is in the air. Spring is in the air. Oh, 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 oh. End poem.
Nice.
great read there, Lawrence, and what a wonderful parody of the song Love is in the Air by John Paul Young. I thought this was very well done by Dammit Dave. And, you know, great, of course, lyrical quality. Very, to me, very relatable, living, you know, in a part of the country where, you know, spring comes a little later and summer is a little shorter. You really appreciate those warmer days. And I really like the optimism in this poem and how it celebrates spring. And I don't know if I'm merely dreaming, don't know if it's going to last, but something that I must believe in, I hope winter is now in the past. I also really like, and I hope that it's not an illusion, for Easter is just around the bend, but my fingers are crossed and I'm hoping that winter has come to an end. And yes, we definitely, the closer it gets to Easter and then even as it gets past Easter, we really just hope for that end of winter and that whole, you know, attitude of, you know, it's time to take out the bike or put on the walking shoes and get outside. So fun write and very well done. And Jean, your thoughts?
Well, you know, I thought this was nicely penned by Dave. Great parody with many great stanzas. You know, spring is in the air. There are buds upon the tree. Spring is in the air. Hear the buzzing of the bees. And I don't know if I'm merely dreaming. Don't know if it's going to last. But it's something that I must believe in. I hope winter now is past. I thought that was just two good stanzas, but I thought there were so many of them throughout. And, yeah, just really well done. And a great read, Laurent.
Thank you, Jean.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, Laurent, you did a great read of that. Your thoughts?
One of the stanzas epitomizes, every day for the last 2 weeks, my faint hope that spring is in the air. And I don't know if I'm being silly for taking my bike for a ride. The day is just too nice not to do it. No reason for staying inside. I really hope that it sticks. I do. Excellent poem.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. I have to agree. Great comments. And up next, we have Pastoral Poem by Matt 29. And Jean, will you give that a read for us, please?
Sure. Okay, Pastoral Poem by Matt 29. Springtime brings playful reverie alive, birds singing from high up above, caterpillars appearing as they munch away, flowers full of color, all competition for attention. The meadows are a frenzy of pulsation, insects of varying shapes and sizes dancing, flurrying among the poppies and grasses, aiming to solidify their breed for another year. Dogs out on their walks sniffing out new smells, cats chasing each other as they scavenge mice, boys running in merriment up and down hillsides, sun shining brightly, chuckling at the hijinks below. And so.
Great read, Jean, and what a wonderful write by Matt 29. And your thoughts, Laurent?
Pam, you had a contest, I think, a few weeks ago, which featured the artwork of an artist who did kind of pastoral scenes, lots of flowers in a very unique style. I don't know if you remember it, but this picture. Yeah, this paints a picture that is very reminiscent of some of that artwork. There are familiar tropes all the way through it. The dogs, the cats, the boys, birds singing, etc. And you don't see the frenzy of pulsations that is described, though the insects of varying shapes and sizes dancing, flurrying among the poppies and grasses. You would see that if you were there, say lying down, you'd be very aware of that from a distance or not. So I like the inclusion there of things that we don't see in a scene that we are looking at.
Oh, I have to agree, yeah, that it definitely does have that feel of that kind of artwork, that kind of, you know, like Grandma Moses type
yes,
artwork.
Yes, there you go.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, and that wasn't the artist. I know who you're talking about, but she kind of reminded me of that type of art that Grandma Moses did. So, yeah, very cool. And Jean, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Thank you. I thought it was a nicely penned piece by Matt. Great imagery in every line. And I thought it was very well done. I grabbed the middle stanza. You know, the meadows are a frenzy of pulsation. Insects of varying shapes and sizes dancing, flurrying among the poppies and grasses, aiming to solidify their breed for another year. Picture well painted. I thought it was a picture well painted throughout the whole thing. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, I think they did a great job. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and like you said at the beginning of the show, and you're so right, Jean, you know, we're really in for a treat tonight as far as imagery, because pastoral artwork and pastoral poetry, and not that it was a requirement that people use imagery in their poems, but it really influences people to write in such a way that it brings forth the stunning imagery within the artwork and within the poetry. I really liked this one for its sense of nostalgia and its sense of innocence. You know, it takes us back to a more innocent time. Wonderful sense of movement, especially with, you know, the flurrying among the poppies and grasses, aiming to solidify their breed for another year. The dancing of the different insects. And then, you know, cats chasing each other as they scavenge mice, boys running in merriment up and down hillside. And I really enjoy also the personification of the sun shining brightly and chuckling at the hijinks below. And there's something about the word hijinks used in this poem that I think adds an absolutely delightful element to it. So I thought this was very well done. And let's see what we have next. We have Pastoral Life by Robert Polsky. And it goes like this. Retracing steps through back home scenes of my childhood, found recollection presents them to view, cottage of my father, the house I was born, stood near the stream. A dog guarded there at the gate, smoke wafted from the warmth inside. Our backyard, the moss-covered oaken bucket, arose from the well in the middle of the yard, the old oak tree toward towered there. It still remembers my first love kisses in its shade. The orchids were sweet with apple bloom. The river run through it. Me and my brother drunk water swam and played there. Loved to wander with willow fishing wand, stood on the river border and took the trout or the yellow bream. Chased through the long, lush grass, pretended we were at battle, and tried to take over. Behind the old oak tree, lie down, felt the plush grass like a snuggly old blanket. Looked up, saw millions of branches protecting us from everything above as frogs croaked loud in the meadow swamp. The dairy house stood beside with rafter, moldy wormwood and beam. Under the eaves, the swallows dwellings lied. The leather-winged bat lived there. The pond and the mill stood adjacent to it, the bridge and the rock where the cataract fell. All there, the orchid, the meadow, the tangled wild wood, every loved spot my childhood knew. Those were the years when life was bright, with dewy mornings and sunset light. Trees were taller, rivers deeper than we walked as giants. And hold the world in arms, race to the end of the rainbows, grew strong with love. didn't know the value of a moment until it became the memory, pastoral life, and poem. What an absolutely beautiful write by Robert Polsky. And Jean, your thoughts?
Let
Are
me try
to use
the red button. Well, not anymore. I hit the red button. I got back. But I thought this was a wonderfully penned piece with incredible imagery throughout. Right here, retracing steps through back home scenes of my childhood. Right there, I mean, he leads you into this so beautifully. Fond recollection presents him to view cottage of my father, the house I was born. Stood near a stream. A dog guarded there at the gate, smoke wafted from the warmth inside. Our backyard, the moss-covered oaken bucket arose from the well in the middle of the yard. The old oak tree towered there. It still remembers my first love kisses in the shade. I just thought it was a beautiful share all the way through, from beginning to end. Another one of Robert's just wonderful poems that he shared with us. Really excellent.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I have to agree. And I like the part you picked out with the mention of the old oak tree, because there is something about trees, if you happen to be lucky enough to grow around or grow up around any, that, are just central to a centered part of childhood, it seems like, at least to me. So great comment. And Laurent, your thoughts?
I like what you just said about the poem, Pam, and trees. I mean, it's nature's jungle, Jim, right? How can young
Absolutely.
Limbs avoid a tree? It's impossible. I love the way Robert gave us the scene through recollections of a magical childhood in many ways when you live in a place like that. I was particularly moved when he said, those were the years when life was bright with dewy mornings and sunset light. Trees were taller, rivers deeper then. We walked as giants and held the world in arms, raced to the end of rainbows, grew strong with love. That echoes in many ways, without the style of Dylan Thomas, many of the things Dylan Thomas used to write about when he wrote about nature and youth in nature. This is a very moving piece.
Yes, I agree. It is. It is a very moving piece, and it does have that kind of Dylan Thomas type feel to it. I love the imagery in this. It does take me back to some of the better parts of my childhood. I was fortunate enough to grow up around a lot of trees, and I don't know about either of you, but higher swings just aren't the same. We had a big. You know what I mean? Like now they're on playgrounds and they're hung by like chains. Where I remember being so excited because our father was hanging up by a piece of like sturdy rope, a used car tire. And it was just so exciting. And it's just not quite the same. Like you don't find the, I'm sure if you go out in like the country, you might, but you know, in town, you definitely don't find tire swings of the same type. And it took me back to moments like that. And, I like how he has one imagery flowing into the next. Just really another one with a nostalgic feel to it, beautifully written, and wonderful attention to detail. Like, yeah, he brings in the stuff that is beautiful about country life, but he also reminds us that there's moldy worm-eaten beans in the rafters and bats and, all that stuff. But they're all a part of that life, part of that nature. You know, I honestly have no problems with bats outside because of the huge amount of mosquitoes they eat. It's only when they come into my house that I freak out.
Right.
You know what I mean? But, yeah, beautifully written and very well done. All right, and let's see what we have next. All right, and we have A Setting for Hay by Stephen N.Y. And Lawrence, will you give that a read for us, please?
I will. And I can't help but make the remark, Pam, that maybe you should put out a menu for mosquitoes. It might make an interesting poem.
Oh, there you go.
It's called A Setting for Hay. Daylights from stone homes that began 10 generations of family. Here, the 9th woken by the rooster's call. They begin their walk to ancestral pastures amidst the burning of logs, the terrestrial perfume of the alpine village. Passing the seasoned wood piles along homes, the graffiti noting births and crumbling facades, the family attends to their summer pilgrimage. The fetor of sun compost rises in wells and mixes with the village's wood perfume, while on the dirt-paved road, hardened by foot and hoof, the dust still mists from the labor of their walk. The edge of road meets land, and across its slopes allows the glance of the glow of the wildflower's rapture. The trail bursts Alps from its horizon. The meadow, now close, grown and prepped of stone, awaits the work of the household, bronzed men and heads-carved women, to murder the grass and herb and paint the human machines back liquid beneath the valley sun. Birds here that cross the plain are finch and crow. Wood there that frames the scene, pine, spruce, mingling beech. Now, on the angled steep ground, they work sliced pasture, the sign of a size, rhythmic sweep. End poem.
Wonderful read, Lawrence. And what a stunning write by Stephen N.Y., who is definitely a very talented poet. And what I like about this one is, and a lot of pastoral poems oftentimes have a very carpe diem, you know, seize the day type feel. And this has that, but it has something more, something I think that is on a deeper level. And that is a family's or a people's connection to a land, not only in the moment, but through their history. I really like that. They began their walk to ancestral pastures amidst the burning of logs, the terrestrial perfume of the alpine village. I also really like the trail birds Alps from the horizon. The meadow now closes, grown and prepped of stone, awaits the work of the household, bronze men and head-scarfed women to murder the grass and herb and paint the human machines back liquid beneath the valley sun. And it's strong imagery, but it reminds us of how much work these men and women put into their land in order to get the crops that they need, that has been an important part of their family's life for generations. So amazing write and very well done. And Jean, your thoughts? Are you on mute, Jean? All right, well, Lauren, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
His imagery is what I find just completely entrancing.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely gorgeous. The parts of this one stanza, while on the dirt-paved road, hardened by foot and hoof, the dust still mists from the labor of their walk. The edge of road meets land, and across its slopes allows the glance of the glow of the wildflower's rapture. Its gorgeous imagery fills the mind's eye with nature's rapture, to use his word. And it is a moment that you want to capture and savor as a reader, because he really brings the entire thing alive with his wonderful descriptions.
Oh, I have to agree. And yes, I think that nature's rapture is definitely a good phrase for that poem. And great comment. All right. Are you back with us, Gene?
Pam, I never left. I went looking all over the place. Nothing was muted, so I'm not sure what happened there. So maybe I'll just yell. I don't know. But who knows? A fabulous piece here with so many great images by Stephen New York. And Stephen's work is always the same. No matter what he does, his imagery is fantastic. I remember long ago we read one of his pieces about New York. I think Laurent might have read it, but it sticks in my head because there was so much imagery and it was fabulous. And this is no different than that. Passing the seasoned woodpiles along homes, the graffiti not noting births and crumbling facades, the family attends to their summer pilgrimage. The fetor of sun compost rises in wells. Just that whole stanza there is just loaded. And it's loaded with not only the imagery of the surroundings, but as you said, Pam, with different family things, the things that pulled that family together. And it was wonderful. So just a great piece. And thank you so much, Stephen, for sharing with us. Great job.
Oh, absolutely. And yes, he definitely has a great hand when it comes to creating imagery. And so, great comment. All right, and up next, we have Peaceful Waters by Betty Page. And Jean, will you give that a read for us, please?
Well, it's your turn, but I'll read it for you. Okay.
What? Are you sure?
No. I know, but it's okay. Betty Page. Peaceful Waters. Weeping willows cascading, relaxing neath warm sunlight. Soft, cozy flannel blankets, elegant picnic for two. Sparrows sing melodically. We dine while sipping on wine. Lush gourmet appetizers, organic grown at our home. Tasty sweet watermelon, pomegranates, fresh berries, homemade cherry fresh baked pies, summertime pink lemonade. Gentle sounds of water flows, rush of rapid riverside. Children jump off old rope swings, splashing round so playfully. Chasing after bright rainbows, in coves by Blue Lagoon, cool, refreshing waterfalls, cleanse us as newborn babies. End poem. Nice.
Great read there, Jean, and what a beautiful write by Betty Page. And Laurent, your thoughts?
I was braced for some explicit pastoral scenes from the words that appeared in it. Okay, no problem. I can readjust. Like Stephen, descriptions are used to edify the reader. The use of an elegant picnic for two is really a trope, if you will, for spring and the summer seasons. Dine while sipping on wine, lush gourmet appetizers, organic grown at our home, which is something that people like to do. I wish I could make wine. And then the visit of the sweet watermelon, pomegranates, fresh berries, homemade cherry, fresh baked pies, summertime pink lemonade. Just an accumulation of the wonderful little things that make up a glorious day in spring. Nicely done.
Oh, absolutely. I have to agree. I know. I had actually read this earlier, so I knew that wasn't as explicit as the label said. But, yes, I can definitely understand having to brace yourself. But she actually has beautifully woven together all this imagery in celebration of a warm spring or summer day. And, Jean, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
You know, I thought Betty did a fabulous job here, and I love the scenes that she created. I like seeing when Betty writes something on this line. But gentle sounds of water flows, rush of rapids riverside. Children jump off old rope swings, splashing around so playfully. I love that, and I love that the last two lines, cool, refreshing waterfalls cleanse us as newborn babies. I thought that was just a sweet note to end it on. So beautiful job, Betty, and thank you for sharing.
Oh, I have to agree. Yeah, those were beautiful lines. It just has such a sense of sweetness and innocence to it. I really like the imagery throughout. I like how the first stanza is just wonderfully romantic with soft, cozy flannel blankets, elegant picnic for two. You know, a picnic to me, you know, especially when done right, it's such a romantic setting. I also like the food that she brings in, that you really connect with those warmer days. Tasty sweet watermelon, pomegranates, fresh berries, homemade cherry fresh baked pies, summertime pink lemonade. I mean, as you're reading those lines, you can just taste those. It's just a delight to read all the way through, and beautifully written, very well done. All right, and let's see what we have next. All right, up next we have Wreathed with Nodding Corn by Emily T. And it goes like this. Ceres, goddess of the corn, of the wheat, chooses to bless the harvest wholesome ears with bumper crop overflowing replete. Turn the ordinary into massed year. The goddess of the fruitful earth sets forth from her lair under the earth to bless crops, deep greens ripened and matured, grown and worth, the yellow gold within the barley tops. Only the flowers of hedges and fields, brambles, blooms, sunflowers, nodding heads, hear her fertility songs witness yields. Yep. Another year, summertime, put a bed and poem. And Laurent, your thoughts.
Yeah, I like the mention of Ceres, the goddess of corn, of the wheat, the goddess of the fruitful earth, sets forth from her lair under the earth to bless crops. The fecundity of the earth, the fruitful season that begins the growing of the crops, the emerging of the berries, of the blooms, of the flowers. And fertility songs have long been a part of human history, either in praise for or in anticipation of a successful harvest. And for the world that of long ago, maybe not so long ago, you're talking about the absolute essential for existence, that fertility their lives depended on. So this is quite the poem. I like that a great deal.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Jean, your thoughts?
I think this was a beautifully penned piece. Incredible imagery and the tale told as well. You know, the goddess of the fruitful earth sets forth from her lair under the earth to bless crops. Deep greens ripened and matured, grown in worth, yellow gold within the barley tops. That's the stanza two, but I wanted to grab stanza one, and then I wanted to grab stanza two, and that, of course, led me to stanza three. So I grabbed the one in the middle. I thought the whole thing was just a wonderful story told and very nicely done. So great work, Joanna Garrido. Emily.
Oh, absolutely. I have to agree.
Yeah.
I have to agree. It's beautifully written. I really like that she brought in Ceres, the goddess, the Roman goddess of agriculture, and used that as a representation for a fruitful bounty, a blessing of the crops that has, been brought forth. And you know, wonderful imagery, and so many, all the way through, like all the stanzas were beautifully written. But I do particularly like that second stanza and then the closing line, hear her fertility songs, witness yields, another year's summertime put abed. The idea of the closing of summertime and the gathering of the crops and their bounties. So excellent write and very well done. And let me see here. What will we grab next? Here we go. We should probably get one of our SoundCloud writes put up. So, all right. Up next, we have A Countryside Summer by Jenny Hunt, 2017. And we have a SoundCloud for that. Jean, whenever you're ready.
Here we go.
A Countryside Summer. Cinnamon apple breeze, enchanting the warm air. Lady of the house rests her famous apple pie on the bay window. She lets the smell calm her. Scents of apples flow through the summer breeze, spreading countryside deliciousness through the wind down to the idyllic turquoise lake, tantalizing her horses and cows where they graze. The blue jay and hummingbirds sing and nibble, listening to their tune, the sunshine and lilies rise. The sweet serenity joy of countryside bliss puts a gleaming smile on her face as she eats her now rested, cooled-off treat, leaving the apple for the animals to eat. End poem.
Wonderful, wonderful read there, Jenny. Great SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And just a reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, then your next best option is to make a recording of your poem so we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And, Laurent, your thoughts.
Apple pie is my favorite pie. That with some ice cream after it's been heated up is just one of the great tastes, I think, in the world. And this poem, A Countryside Summer, with its mention of a cinnamon apple breeze, which, by the way, is absolutely gorgeous phrasing, and the lady of the house's famous apple pie sitting on a bay window, well, my lord, you sneak along the side of the house, you reach up, and you grab that baby, and you run, because it's worthwhile. But, no, scents of apples, just one of the better smells in the world, and the way she writes about it, scents of apples flow through the summer breeze, spreading countryside deliciousness through the wind down to the idyllic turquoise lake. Beautiful little piece.
Oh, absolutely. I have to agree. And I like how she centered this around the apples and, you know, what they mean to the people and the animals. So, great comment. And Jean, your thoughts?
You know, I thought it was a well-written piece for sure. Wonderful story told. I like how Jenny created this and made it pleasing to all the senses, not just our eyes or what have you. You know, the smell of the apple pie, leaving it, the apples for the animals to eat. It gives you something in the country or in the landscape to maybe see. I don't know. I just thought it had a lot going on in it, and I thought she really did a wonderful job. So definitely a relaxing and wonderful tale. Thanks, Jenny. Great job.
Oh, I have to agree. Yeah, absolutely. Great comment. Yeah, this is beautifully written. I like her attention to detail. I think she's done a great job with this style of poem. And I personally have a fondness for apples, but I think mainly because they're one of the few fruits that actually grow in abundance in this area. And there's such a nostalgic feel to them for me. I like that it's not just about the imagery here in this poem, but the scents that she brings in. Scents of apples flow through the summer breeze, spreading countryside deliciousness through the wind down to the idyllic turquoise lake. You know, absolutely beautiful imagery all the way through, and a reminder of how important and of a treat that apples are to people and animals alike. So very well done. And up next, we have, oops, that's the same poem. Yeah, I actually, for Easter, I made, to go with our turkey, I made homemade applesauce with brown sugar and cinnamon, and that turned out really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
And up next, we have Come Walk With Me by C.L. Howard. And Lauren, will you give that a read for us, please?
With pleasure. With pleasure. Come walk with me. Wake up, my love. The sun has risen. Outside, the air is soft and warm. Night has left her dew behind her, her chills surrender to dawn's reform. Our walls around our garden held the deer and rabbits far away, and since the birthing of Aurora, I've just one wish I wish to say. Come walk with me, my precious treasure, among the corn and squash and bean. The sisters three may feed tomorrow, but for now, all I want to glean is your tender hand, soft in my hand, your laughter at our cats at play, a sideways glance, a gentle squeezing, your lips, my very own bouquet. Come walk with me in fields of barley. Feel the freshly ripened head. Run and laugh. Forget tomorrow's, our garden stroll, our daily bread. Pluck the purple ripe tomato, I bought the knife and salt to taste, the bitter and the sweet together, a lovely gift of garden's grace. Come walk with me, my forever lover, see the wonders that we grow, from seed to stem, from fruit to flower, every carrot in its row. Plunge your hands deep within her, that darkened earth where life is born. Remove potatoes, sweet and tender. We'll cook them fresh with barley corn. Come walk with me to feed our hens, love. Perhaps there'll be an egg or two, a scramble with some toast and butter. 2 cups of coffee with cream will do. Sit with me at our table. Let my eyes your eyes enfold. And see, the man will always love you. Will walk with you till time grows old. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. And what a beautiful, heartfelt, and romantic write by C.L. Howard. And I really like that this has that pastoral feeling of appreciating nature and the beauty and the bounty of it. The fact that it was, what's more important about this poem is that it focuses on a deep connection between a husband and wife, and the time they spend together, and him realizing how important that time is. And of course, there's some great clever references in here that are wonderfully spiritual. The reference to the three sisters, you know, being, of course, the corn, the squash, and beans. Among the corn, squash, and beans, the sisters three may feed tomorrow, but for now, all I want to glean is your tender hand soft in my hand, your laughter at our cats at play. You know, it's a little pleasure in life, pleasures in life, and I really like this all the way through, but I also like where it says, come walk with me in fields of barley, feel the freshly ripened head, run and laugh, forget tomorrow's, our garden stroll, our daily bread. And I like how that brings out the spiritual connection that comes with going for walks, or, you know, with gardening and connecting to nature and connecting to the land. And, you know, I remember when my mom raised chickens, that there's something about fresh eggs that makes so much better, you know, omelets or, you know, scrambled eggs than store-bought ones. So that end stanza definitely makes me hungry, and it makes me reminisce. So beautifully written and very well done. And Jean, your thoughts?
I thought this poem was so beautiful all the way through. Every line, every stanza, I thought it was just wonderful. And again, I could have picked any one of these stanzas and pointed to it and said, that was wonderful. But come walk with me, my precious treasure, among the corn and squash and bean. The sisters three may feed tomorrow, but for now all I want to glean is your hand, your tender hand soft in my hand, your laughter at our cat's expense. A sideways glance, a gentle squeezing, your lips my very own bouquet. I thought the whole thing was just gorgeous, just really gorgeous. A wonderful work, CL, and thank you for sharing.
Absolutely, You're right. It's gorgeous all the way through. So great comment. And Lauren, your thoughts?
Yeah. Stephen weaves with consummate skill a loving and tender moment. Caretakers of the garden and harvesters of the earth who walk among the fruits of their labor, enjoying nature's bounty. And while never mentioned, there's something very spiritual about this poem. I mean, it doesn't mention God, there's no reverence for a higher being, and yet somehow all through this, I just felt it a very spiritual sense, and maybe it's just in recognizing that this poem speaks to a level of existence that is almost idyllic, that if you could just exist on what you get from the earth this way, how much better life would be and how much more rewarding. Just a really very, very nice poem.
Oh, I have to agree. It does. That's what makes it a wonderful pastoral poem, is that it focuses in on that idyllic setting and does, as you were saying, have that sense of spirituality to it. So beautifully written and a great comment. All right, and let's see what we have next. All right. Up next, we have Daybreak Pastoral by Stelina. And we do have a sound card for that whenever you're ready, Jean.
Got it. There goes. Yeah, I don't know.
In the blushing dawn, the slumberous sun peeping with drowsy eyes over her patchwork quilt, burnishing flawless, fertile fields with her amber glow, illuminates the wafture of trees and wheat, which beckon me, yawning from my cozy nook. I stroll leisurely across the mellow meadow, through sweet-smelling sod dampened with dew, scattered like thousands of tiny fairy diamonds. The soft breeze murmurs through the leaves, redolent with the aroma of fruit dripping with juice, availing my senses of the need for sustenance and to quench my parched morning throat. I pluck an apple from an overburdened bough, biting into its crisp, crunchy flesh, savoring its sap, the tanginess tingling my tender taste buds. Flashes of blue and gold flicker as finches fly, gathering sprigs and bark for their nests, their dulcet songs lilting in the air, heralding the birth of a new day.
Wonderful read and write, Stelina. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Jean, your thoughts?
AWOL.
Are you on mute, Jean?
I was. Yes.
Sorry.
I was thinking, I guess. I was just mulling it around. Because my comment's already written here. I said I was lucky enough to hear this last Friday. I thought it was a gorgeous piece and beautiful imagery, and it was so wow. And I thought it was very well expressed. Really well done. I picked up the part, the soft breeze murmurs through the leaves, redolent with the aroma of fruit dripping with juice. And I took that all the way down to heralding the birth of a new day. So, and I laughed in my original comment and said I should have just copied and pasted the whole darn thing because, you know, it was all beautiful. I loved how she started out with the in the blushing dawn, the slumberous sun peeping with drowsy eyes over her patchwork quilt. Just incredible, wonderful, wonderful imagery and great details throughout. So excellent job, Stelina, and thanks for sharing it with us. Really great.
Oh, absolutely. I have to agree. And, yeah, definitely one of those poems where you just want to copy and paste the whole thing. And, yeah, I like, as you said, the mention of the breeze, because that really adds a sense of movement to the poem and really brings it to life along with all the other imagery. So great comment. And, Laurent, your thoughts?
I was so struck by the opening four lines, as well as the whole poem. In the blushing dawn, the slumberous sun, peeping with drowsy eyes over her patchwork quilt, burnishing flawless, fertile lands with her amber glow, illuminates the wafture of trees and wheat. Beautifully written, beautifully rhymed as well. The first time I heard this, I told Stelina that it was a stunning piece, so evocative of a moment that touches us with its magic, that words failed me. And now I must say it's almost better the second time around. I love her recording, the sound of the voice that reads it. Just beautiful.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It is one of those poems that's worth hearing more than once. There's so much to appreciate it in it. And I like how this is a celebration of not only the season, but a celebration of the rising sun and, you know, the promise and hope of what the day has to offer. I really like with the beginning, with the slumberous sun peeping with drowsy eyes over her patchwork quilt, burnishing flawless fertile fields with her amber glow, illuminates the wafture of trees and wheat, which beckon me, yawning from my cozy nook. You know, just a beautiful imagery throughout. I also like where she describes the dew as scattered like thousands of tiny fairy diamonds. You know, I always think that whenever you see a river or a lake where the sun is shining on it and you get those sparkles of light that reflect off it, that it always looked like fairy diamonds. So, you know, I like that Stelina has captured what I've thought before when looking at sparkling water in, painted by sunlight. And another one that celebrates the apple, availing my senses of the need for sustenance and to quench my parched morning throat, I pluck an apple from an overly burdened bough, biting into its crisp, crunchy flesh, savoring its sap. There's almost a kind of a delicate sensuality in the act of enjoying a piece of fruit. And I appreciate that, and I appreciate how this is a very much a live-in-the-moment celebration of life. And so beautifully written and very well done. All right. Up next we have To the Late Passionate Shepherd by Way Down Upon Joy. And Jean, will you give that a read for us, please?
Sure. To the Late Passionate Shepherd by Way Down Upon Joy. It was my hand that you did seek. My mind was moved, I could not speak. Long days I dreamed of your embrace, with mind replete, a state of grace. And as time passed, I watched you roam the fields and hillsides close to home, a gentle shepherd with his sheep, and I, your love, would watch would keep. Soon came that time when your love changed and promises got rearranged. I sensed your love was insincere. Long months soon turned into a year. And yet I could not let you go. You won my heart. I loved you so. Then came the day the news had spread that you'd been stabbed and left for dead. It was for love that you had died. I felt betrayed, but still I cried. And none would know your one request or thoughts of how you loved me best. And though it was my hand you sought, now that you're gone, I'm left with thoughts. And follow.
Great read, Jean. And what a beautiful write by Way Down Upon Joy. And Lauren, your thoughts.
Yeah, it strikes me that this poem is a combination of emotion, of nature, of love, of betrayal, of sadness, of death, finishing with thought. All the things that occurred in this poem are so delicately and well positioned to tell a story in a really timeless way. Very impressed by Joy. To the Late Passionate Shepherd. Wow. What a wonderful poem.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I have to agree. She does do a wonderful job. She's a very talented poetess. Does a wonderful job in this, as you said, of weaving together that imagery and the emotion. And this was an answer poem to Christopher Marlowe's The Passionate Shepherd to His Love. His, of course, being written in the voice of the shepherd, and hers being written in the voice of the love who, you know, as you were mentioning, Lauren, she's been betrayed, and she's left with thoughts of what could have been since she has lost them. Definitely takes a dark turn, but I think that makes the storytelling more intriguing. You know, where it says, and yet I could not let you go. You'd won my heart. I loved you so. Then came the day the news had spread that you'd been stabbed and left for dead. It was for love that you died. I felt betrayed, but still I cried. That idea that, you know, he was killed for love of another when she was ready to love him. At least that's how I read it. I definitely think it is epic storytelling, amazing rhyme and flow, and great use of you know, as I like to call it, an answer poem, you know, the taking a character from another poem that doesn't have their voice used and then using their voice. So excellent write and very well done. And Jean, your thoughts?
I think I thought this was most excellent, beautifully expressed and full of great imagery. And I thought it was a wonderful response to the original prompt. Great rhyme and meter throughout. You know, I had to pull up some of the lines. You know, I could have gone on and on with this one as well. It was my hand that you did seek. My mind was moved. I could not speak. Long days I dreamed of your embrace, with mind replete, a state of grace. And as time passed, I watched you roam the fields and hillsides close to home. And, you know, of course, I could have grabbed the next two lines and the next two lines and the next two lines because I thought they were wonderful. It was very well done. So nice job, Joy, and thank you so much for sharing with us tonight. This was beautiful. Nice work.
Oh, I have to agree. This will not be an easy contest to judge because there is just so much stunning poetry throughout it. Great comment. All right. And up next we have Last Day Before Spring by Hall of Mindfulness. And we do have a recording for that one, too.
Yeah, we got it right here. Here we go.
The last day before spring. The last day of winter, low sunshine radiates, dazzles, thanking the season for all it offered. Dormancy, hibernation, rest and recuperation, hidden preparations for the spectacle soon to be revealed. Trees majestic reaching out to the great unknown, buds on skeletal canopies standing out like goose pimples on shivery skin, signaling the soon-to-be-seen robes of green. As the earth bursts this new growth from the ground and seed trays alike, blossom blooms on neighbouring shrubs and trees. All welcomed by the lingering colour of winter stalwarts and early risers. Birds industriously collect fallen twigs, peeling bark, gathering moss from lawns and tree stumps, lovingly creating a home from which to welcome new life. Earthworms preparing soil, insects preparing to eat and be eaten, bees and butterflies waking up to pollinate and propagate. Life's essentials. Cool, fresh air caresses all in its path, pairing with the sun's heat to dry out the previous day's sustaining rain. Elemental magic. And we too stretch, exercise, shed the winter gain, feel the energy of this change, adhere it, be it, as we tune into the sensory wonder of now. The last day before spring. Low sunshine radiates, dazzles, sharing the promise of all this season brings. End poem. Sam Hall, Hall of Mindfulness.
Wonderful read and write, Hall of Mindfulness. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Always dangerous. Always dangerous there, dear, because my thoughts tell me I need to digress a little bit. There's a reason why schools should teach public speaking, should teach the appreciation of literature, the ability to write and describe. Otherwise, poems like this are going to die. So well read, so well written, you could grab almost anything. But let me take bees and butterflies waking up to pollinate and propagate life's essentials. And before that, lovingly creating a home from which to welcome new life. Earthworms preparing soil, insects preparing to eat and be eaten, and all the language that accompanies it from first stanza to last stanza, the last day of winter and the last day before spring. Just nicely done.
Oh, I have to agree. And yeah, there's definitely a very classic poem feel to this, right? So great comment. And Jean, your thoughts?
Well, I had some, but then I got confused. Actually, you know, I thought this was just a beautiful, beautiful write. Very well put together, and, you know, I thought it was clever. I had to say, bees and butterflies waking up to pollinate and propagate life's essentials. Cool, fresh air caresses all in its path, pairing with the sun sheet to dry out the previous days. I thought the whole tail end of this was just wonderfully put together and well expressed. I mean, I could have put in the earthworms too, but I kind of skipped over them this time. But I do think that it was just a wonderful, wonderful write. That's for sure. Now, listen, before I hand it back to you, Pam, I want to let you know Gavin is on the line. Gavin and Company actually is on the line because he's got his little one with him. So,
oh, wonderful. Well, welcome, Gavin and Company. Glad you could be here.
Thanks, Pam. Glad to be here.
Very cool. And did you get a chance to hear or to read the poem Last Day Before Spring by Hall of Mindfulness?
I actually just caught the end of it.
Okay. Well, I will say that I think this was beautifully written. I really like that in this poem she celebrates a last day, you know, like a specific day, that last day before spring, that day when winter is coming to an end, when, you know, there's that representation of new life. And you're walking on the edge. It's such a beautiful and mystical time. I really like the imagery in this all the way through, but especially trees majestic reaching out to the great unknown, buds on skeletal canopies, standing out like goose pimples on shivery skin, singling the soon-to-be-seen robes of green. What a wonderful lines and imagery to describe, you know, the coming of the leaves of the trees. And, you know, I also really like cool, fresh air caresses all in its path, pairing with the sun's heat to dry out the previous days, sustaining rain elemental magic. This truly is a celebration of that magical time of year when winter ends and light comes forth from spring. So excellent write and very well done. All right, and let me see what's next. All right, up next we have Summer Picnic by Cedar Chapman. And Gavin, can you give that a read for us, please?
Gladly. Summer Picnic. Two rusty leaves lock in a ritual dance as they twirl in summer eddies. Cottonweed falls like snow, blending old memories of cuddling on nippy winter nights. A warm ghost carries honeysuckle petals. Its sweet scent wakes willow leaves to gently brush chrome handlebars resting against a tree. Ants and bees explore a wicker basket. A silky Chardonnay waits patiently, bathing in sunlight, breathing, sweating, linen trousers and a summer dress, waltz alone on a limoncello pasture. Caught in a lover's whirlwind, like two rusty leaves, legs and arms intertwine on a serape blanket, as fingers stroke hair and trace jawline. Soft whispers and giggles meld with chirping robins and sparrows, while silver pond ripples caress the shoreline, welcoming summer sighs and blissful memories. End poem.
All right, wonderful read there, Gavin. And what a beautiful write by Cedar Chapman. And Lauren, your thoughts?
Yeah, the attention to detail, the small things, the larger things, the movement that occurs in the stanzas, for instance. And by the way, Gavin, you wrote this very well. Ants and bees explore a wicker basket. A silky Chardonnay waits patiently, bathing in sunlight, breathing, sweating, linen trousers and a summer dress, waltz alone on a limoncello pasture, caught in a lover's whirlwind like the two rusty leaves. I like the fact that the end of that stanza refers right back to the beginning. Wonderful metaphor of two people at a certain stage in their life. Very well done.
Oh, absolutely. And there is a certain kind of polished feel to a poem. I have to agree when one stanza, like later in the poem, connects back to the beginning. So great comment there. And Jean, your thoughts?
Well, you know, I had read this one before and I thought it was just gorgeous. Well penned and loaded with imagery. And I think they did an awesome job with the prompts. Cedar Chapman never seems to let us down when it comes to wonderful poetry. This time I grabbed some lines. You know, so many awesome lines. This. Ants and bees explore wicker baskets. A silky Chardonnay waits patiently, gazing in sunlight, breathing, sweating. Linen trousers and a summer dress walked alone in the lemon yellow basket, caught in a lover's whirlwind, like the two rusty leaves. I thought that was great how he pulled that together and referenced it back to the two rusty leaves in the beginning. So just a wonderful, wonderful piece of poetry all the way through. So thank you, Peter, for that.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, I have to agree. I did like that section, too, that you brought out. The funny thing is I have this limoncello sparkling water that I really like the flavor of, but I have no freaking clue what a limoncello even is. I mean, it sounds like a cross between a lemon and a cello, but but it does taste good. It certainly does taste good. Do you know what they are, Jean?
The only thing I know about a limoncello is I believe it's an Italian drink that was, I don't know if it's like a schnapps or or what exactly. I'm not exactly sure the composition of it, but I know that it is an Italian, I want to say, concoction.
Okay. I will definitely have to search that because, it sounds good.
Oh, goodness,
for sure. But great comment. And Gavin, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
I really, really like the use of vocabulary here, even though I kind of struggled with the read initially. I think reading it again, it gives a lot of emphasis to certain lines that create vivid imagery. So some of the best imagery in this poem, in my opinion, is caught in a lover's whirlwind. Like two rusty leaves to add to that to give it like a simile feel, right? And then we have meld with chirping robins and sparrows while silver pond ripples caress the shoreline, right? This is just stunning imagery all around. I think I really enjoyed how the rhyme is placed where we have eddies and memories, because when we're saying this poem aloud, we like to breathe at these certain rhythms, right? Even though the line doesn't indicate that that's an end rhyme, right? Because we have of afterwards, but it flows into the next one. And these rhymes are placed like based off of speech, and it's interesting to me. And I really think this is a fantastic poem because of that.
Oh, it really is. I have to agree. A fantastic poem and great observation on the placement of the rhyme. This has wonderful imagery throughout. I like how it's a pastoral poem and such a wonderful sense of romanticism as I was mentioning earlier, that romantic picnic and great attention to details, how he even brings in, you know, the ants, you know, and the picnic basket and a warm gust carries honeysuckle petals, its sweet scent wakes willow leaves, gently brushed chrome handlebars resting against a tree. I really like that kind of attention to detail in the beauty of the surroundings and the beauty of the moment. So just an amazing write all the way through and very well done. All right, and let's see what we have next.
I don't know if you saw it, but hot damn Pam, not only did I find out what it is, I got us a recipe.
Awesome. Well, I know what we'll be making some Wednesday night.
Yep, there you go.
Very cool. All right, and Lawrence, I have your poem up next. Go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
All right. Now, this is not precisely pastoral, but it's a look around the meadow's edges, so to speak. Perhaps an odd parable for our time without moral or purpose save to hopefully entertain. This is called Rabbit, Fox, Turtle, Ant. Rabbit knew the meadow, stalks and hillocks, damp places, dry spaces, the stretch of sheep from here to there, the domicile, the sun-drenched dwelling of a hare with nary a care. Egotistical, lazy, resistant to the physical, he would chill a little beneath the apple boughs in certain knowledge of an apple's fate. Anticipate its falling. He preferred at ease to wait. No task important, no friendship shared, so little did he care for other beasts, but of them fox the least. His mother often warned, beware the fox, his gleaming teeth. Turtle lived in a smallish bog, the other side of the meadow. Took him a day to cross it, from morning soon to twilight's shadow, he of enigmatic pate and slowest rolling gait. Details, without them turtles fail. Hard shells heavy, 'tis the levy paid, armor to protect when quickest speed is stayed, and hint of danger detected, limbs retracted, risk is deflected. Fox was hungry. Rabbit ran from teeth and flashing claws as fox was fast. It could not outlast darting brilliance, sheer resilience fear gives to the legs to avoid being fed to the fox. Turtle noticed, stopped to watch each twist and turn from bog to berm, chuckling at the sight, when an ant on the ground heard the sound, the beat of the pounding flight. Ant piped up in the shrill of the small. Turtle, you're adequately tall. What, pray tell, do you watch? Can't see the fracas, the ruckus. I'm so petite. Please tell me all. I've the time. Be complete. Turtle told the tale, the chase and its gory ending. Forever died, attempting a turn so sharp he slipped, and so tumbled, humbled by the fox. Ripped from floppy ears to yellow socks. Socks, queried Ant. What a curious habit for a rabbit to wear. A most peculiar hair. True, drawled the turtle, but the telling took its time, and this ending needed rhyme. Socks could make him slip, which is why he lost his grip. Pure conjecture, I admit. Now, I must be on my way. I've got little else to say. Farewell, Ant, until well met on another day. Ant watched Turtle trundle away, a slow, methodical easing forward, as if walking on glass. Turning, Ant arrowed for Fox's remains, scattered in the meadow grass, proceeding, as Ant's will, with garbage disposal of the inertial mass. End poem.
Great read, Lawrence. I really like the way that you tiptoed around the edge of the pastoral, traditional pastoral poem. Oh, you know, it shows an appreciation for nature, but it shows a darker side to nature, the fact that there is the hunter and the hunted. I like very much that this reminds me of Aesop's Fables, which used to be a favorite of mine to read, and also kind of a bit, although a bit darker, but it makes me also think of the the lady who wrote about, Squirrel Nutkin and Peter Cottontail, Beatrice Potter. Yes. Yeah. Aesop's Fable and Beatrice Potter combined. And I like how you bring forth the personality of the different animals, the fox, you know, being, you know, egotistical and lazy, the turtle being, you know, just taking his time and mellow through life. And I like the lesson learned that no matter how, you know, smart you think you are, the little ant will eventually take you down. It's a wonderful parody, not parody, a wonderful, what do you call that, fable for our times, you know, with the extended metaphor on a world filled with danger around every corner. So I really liked the humor in this. I liked the playing with the rhyme. And I especially liked the end, but I liked the movement. I liked within where you had Turtle Notice stop to watch each twist and turn from bog to berm, chuckling at the sight when an ant on the ground heard the sound, the beat of the pounding flight. Wonderful lines there and very well done. And Gavin, your thoughts?
I just want to say it's an excellent read. Pam, you put the wind out of my sails, saying pretty much everything I was initially thinking. I think the from the bog to berm, right, chuckling at the sight when an ant on the ground heard, right? This is a fantastic rhyme pattern. And then it carries on because it's kind of just skipping over that. And it's, again, another testament to not using end rhyme, but then using rhyme where you would pause, right, to give more emphasis onto the next part, the sound, right? Sound, the beating of the pounding chord, right? This is just pummeling in that imagery, the sensations that come with it. I really like how everybody in the poem, right, not just embodies the character that has the aspect of the animal, right, but then also has a metaphorical representation of the world that we live in. It reads a little bit like a children's fairy tale, but it has so much more of an adult, darker connotation to it because there's no way that someone under the age of perhaps 13 or so could fully, like, place this into perspective with their own life. But I don't know. I felt really sad going through this because it kind of like it did reflect on a lot of my experiences personally. And I think rereading it again, I feel like the stanza breaks here at the end, how we're taking these, like, what would have been like a full stanza into these three different parts, kind of makes us go at each one of these a little bit more slowly and take each part as its own. So we have ant watch turtle trundle away, a slow, methodical easing forward as if walking on glass. And it does carry on into turning, but we're going to give it a long break there because that's where the stanza is. So. And then again with the grass receding, right? This is just another way to begin a whole new phrase, and I really like the use of stanza here. But excellent read, excellent write.
Great comment, Gavin. Thank you.
Yes, absolutely. Wonderful comment. Thank you. And Jean, your thoughts?
Well, you know, I thought this was a wonderful piece. Clever, fable-ish piece. Nice and fable-ish. Tale nicely told. Great use of detail throughout. I really enjoyed the piece. I was debating whether I wanted to pick up like all the first three stanzas or if I wanted to pick up the last three stanzas. And I said, you know, I'm not really sure which way I want to go with this because I wanted to pick something that reflected like the meat and potatoes of it. Not everything, but, you know, at least each of the characters in it. So very well done, Laurent. As always, nice work.
Thanks, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely wonderful comment. And up next we have Waiting by Weaver of Dreams. And Jean, would you give that a reading for us, please?
I don't know. I don't have much of a Scots accent. How you doing? Okay, now that I've been a smarty. This is called Waiting by Weaver of Dreams. I await my secret suitor. Breath ragged, heart aflutter. The beauty all around me. There's naught to calm this panic. Never have I turned my back on society's strictest mores. Why now is the question I ask. Mayhap I have not been aware of this wonderful, wanton ache before. Farman's daughter, lord's son, that match would be frowned upon. Whilst I know not if he be true in his regard, I risk my reputation, but verily, he is worth that and more. We are to meet today and elope. I watch for his carriage and for watch and watch till the sun sets, then pale moonlight holds sway. With nowhere to go, I wrap my cloak around me, lay me down amongst the golden hay and weep useless. Shame and sorrow tighten my throat. Then I feel my heart is torn asunder. Shivering with fear, knowing not where to turn for aid, I hear, Charlotte, sweet Charlotte, tell me you are near. My beloved holds me. Then we are away. End quote.
Great read, Jean, and what a beautiful write by Kate. And Gavin, your thoughts?
All right, starting us off, I want to say this is a fantastic write in the sense to where, like, I feel like I'm experiencing this in my life right now. I don't want to go too much into my own personal life, but it's like how vividly they've captured such a real and relatable experience. I think the second stanza here, farmer's daughter, lord's son, that match would be frowned upon. Whilst I know not if he be true in his regard, I risk my reputation. But verily, he is worth that and more. We are to meet today and elope. I watch for his carriage and for watch and watch till the sun sets, then pale moonlight holds sway. It's so relatable. I love it.
You know, I think that's a wonderful thing when we can connect on a personal level with a poem. And it seems like, you know, the topic of love, of course, has been one that many poets has related to throughout history, which is why it always stays fresh. So great comment. And Laurent, your thoughts?
I think this poem is fine. Katie begins with the anticipation of waiting for a secret suitor, and that anticipation is edged with panic because she's been a good girl. She's never turned her back, or never have I turned my back on society's strictest mores. She's, you know, one assumes virginal at the time, but now, all of a sudden, those things are going to change, and she feels that wonderful, wanton ache, and maybe that's the thing that turns our mind around and lets our instincts and bodies lead us in a direction the mind says one shouldn't. And of course, she reflects now with a little bit of panic and wonder and fear at the unlikely match of a lord's son with, one presumes, a commoner. And the question in her mind becomes kind of a fearful watch for his carriage and for a watch that lengthens until the sun sets and moonlight holds sway, at which stage the anticipation turns into sorrow. She imagines the worst. She lays me down amongst the golden hay and weep copiously, she says. Shame and sorrow. Shame at having transgressed society's mores, even in her mind, and sorrow at the thought that everything that she feels is for naught because he's not coming. And all turns around in the last couple of lines when she hears Charlotte, sweet Charlotte, tell me you are near. And then all is well. My beloved holds me. Then we are away. It's a wonderful little voyage to the mind and the emotions of someone waiting for a very special moment to occur and then fearing it's going to slip away from a grasp, giving up, only to be reborn in the moment. It's really very skillful, very creative, and is an excellent look at what goes on in the mind of a character like this.
Oh, absolutely. This, I have to agree, wonderful comment. This really had a very gothic romanticism to it. It, you know, it kind of takes you back in time. I really like the emotional impact of this, right? The sense of waiting, as you were saying, Lauren, for that special moment. I like how, now, Kate, our dear Kate, is always known for doing twists. But here I feel like she's done a twist on her twist, because most of the time she'll have you thinking in the right that something romantic or sweet or passionate is going on. And then she just gets you at the end with that dark twist. But here she has you really feeling with the main character, that sense of loss, that sense of betrayal and fear. And then at the end, you know, where to turn to for aid, I hear, Charlotte, sweet Charlotte, tell me you are near. My beloved holds me, then we are away. What a wonderful romantic touch, concluding this story, which, of course, isn't technically concluded because we could hear so much more about Charlotte and her love in future poems, in my opinion. So excellent write and very well done. And all right. And let's see what we have next. All right. Up next, we have Tomes, Tombs, and Wisteria Blooms by Eric Svensson. And it goes like this. Tomes, Tombs, and Wisteria Blooms, memory. In strange, sweet-scented purple rain, silken petal euphoria floats, flooded eye motes overflow. Beloved tomes discovered in rambling farmhouse study, Danish grandfather's sacred space study, Hans Christian Andersen fairy tales, Princess and the Pea Stuck. Tombs, equiescence in a quiet farm corner, Danish settler grandparents and their sons abide. Cypress, thorn trees, and radiant red aloe pervade. Shade courageous souls from harsh African sun. Tenacious wisteria, trunk twirled around settler home veranda. Come rain or shine, silken purple rain petals spoke, drifted down to spread their sweetness. Glowworm intent to highlight miraculous moments. Tomes, tombs, and wisteria blooms. Eternal grooms gathered onto his bosom. Courageous souls, earth bondsmen and women transplanted into heavenly realms. While oak, jacaranda, and weeping willow still abide on hallowed settler ground. End poem. And what an absolutely stunning write by Eric Svensson. And Laurent, let's start with your thoughts.
Yeah. I enjoyed hearing one of Eric's poems read by somebody other than Eric, not to denigrate his reading. I think he reads amazingly. But it's nice to see how other people will take his words. And you did a very credible job, Pam. I appreciate that read. I'm always struck by Eric's poetry. Sometimes his poems flow effortlessly. Other times he very purposefully gives us language that is not difficult to wrap your tongues around, but kind of brings us up short each time as if to emphasize the word itself, as in tenacious wisteria, trunk twirled around settler home veranda. It's the alliteration that makes that particular sentence smooth, as opposed to the choppy in any way. If you take this, the line, Danish settler grandparents and their sons abide, you know, there's kind of a, you're brought up short at the end of the words. There's no sibilance. But, again, Danish settler, grandparents, their sons, the essential information in the line is kind of highlighted by the way he reads it, by the way he writes it, excuse me. And that last line, while oak, jacaranda, and weeping willow still abide on hallowed settler ground, again, a little, not the easiest line to read, but again, purposeful choice of words and arrangement so as to emphasize the meat of the line. Very skillful and wonderful imagery throughout.
Oh, I have to agree. I have to agree. Yeah, that jacaranda tree is the one thing I struggled with because of the fact that, you know, oftentimes in different cultures, the J is pronounced either a Y or an H. And I wasn't 100% sure in the moment, but wonderful comment, Lauren. And Jean, your thoughts?
You know, I thought this was just a beautiful picture painted by Eric. You know, he all throughout, I mean, and when you get down into these stanzas, tenacious wisteria trunk twirled around settler home veranda. Come rain or shine, silk and purple rain petals spoke. Drifted down to spread their sweetness, glowworm and tennel to highlight miraculous moments. Tombs, and mysterious bloom, eternal broom gathered unto his bosom, courageous soul. Earth bondsmen and women transplanted into heavenly realm, while oak, jacaranda, and weeping willow still abide on hallowed settler land. I just thought that was just a touch on the imagery and the picture that he did paint. Because if you were to sit down with a brush and put all that together, it would be a beautiful, beautiful thing. So excellent job, Eric, and thank you so much for sharing. And it was a little strange not to hear your voice. But, Pam, you did do a fine job.
It was greatly missed.
Absolutely.
Wonderful comment. And, Gavin, your thoughts?
Okay, so one of our commenters here was talking about meaning and the other was talking about imagery, so I think I'll accent more on the rhyming patterns here because I really enjoyed those. I really liked how we used veranda here in the second to last stanza, and then we get the jacaranda there at the end in the final stanza, and then it kind of ties in everything in between. And then we have several more instances of that happening throughout the poem where we'll have something rhyme several lines later, right? But it kind of like supersedes the form of the poem and then goes more onto the actual speaking essence of the poem, right? And then we're using complementary essences inside of these stanzas. So we're using using veranda here, and then it goes onto this silk and purple rain petals, right? The textures, right, in this imagery, and then we have tomes, tombs, and wisteria blooms, and then we're talking about the groom gathered onto his bosom, right? So we just have like this all of the things that are inside of his heart, right? Because when you're like a groom, you might wear like a flower or something. Then, right, a corsage or something, right? So I feel like he's dressed well, and then this final line here, still abide on hallowed settler ground, kind of gives the whole thing an essence of like understanding that we're here on top of something else that has been here a very long time. These weeping willows, the jacaranda and the oak, you know, it still stands, right? Even though we've twisted the land, right? And then we go back into this tenacious wisteria trunk twirled around settler home veranda, right? So it's just always going back to these themes over and over. And it's so much recurrence that I had to talk about that because I felt like it kept going back to other parts where I was like, oh, yeah, that. And then, oh, yeah, that. And then the other thing that really stood out to me, I love the use of the complementary images in these two lines here with radiant red aloe and harsh African sun, right? Because when we think of aloe, like you get like a jug of aloe to drink or something, it's always green, you know, with like this radiant red aloe coming from the harsh red African sun, right? And it's, so it is courageous, a shade of courageous, right? I love it.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Great observations there on the rhyming patterns and the use of the imagery and the use of textures. And Eric definitely does have a creative way of combining imagery. And I thought this was a heartfelt and nostalgic rite, paying tribute to family and to nature and to a life of farming and learning and just growing as a person. I really like especially a tenacious wisteria trunk twirled around settler home veranda, come rain or shine, silken purple rain petals spoke, drifted down to spread their sweetness, glow warm intent to highlight miraculous moments. And those truly are the miraculous moments, is those moments that you look at nature and you see it blossom, you see it grow, and you connect with it. And I like how that part does speak on the spirituality found within nature. I also like the nod to his grandfather, Danish grandfather's sacred space study, Hans Christian Andersen's fairy tales, Princess and the Pea Stuck. Great nostalgia there. You know, for my grandfather was always, you know, he had his favorite chair and he loved reading his westerns. Like, who is that really famous guy who wrote a lot of westerns? Help me out here.
Lawrence, oh, I know who you mean. I can see it in my mind's eye and I can't pronounce it. God damn it.
Zane Grey. He loved to read Zane Grey.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, and watch John Wayne. So I very much enjoyed this rite and thought it was beautifully written. And I do have two carryovers. I'm not going to try to rush through reader comments. So I'll bring those over to my break-on-through show. You know, and this has just been a wonderful show. Of course, you know, thank you as always to Jean for being a wonderful twisted sister and for all she does in the background. Thank you to Laurent and Gavin for calling in. Thank you, Stelina, Nicholas, Jenny. Boy, I hope I'm not missing anybody. Anybody who hung out on the board, I truly appreciate you all. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, is listening now, or will be listening later. I truly appreciate you all. Like I said, this has just been a beautiful night of poetry. Make sure to check out all the poetry contests and topic boards put up by our late night poets, hosts and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. And Jean, would you like to tell us about a couple of upcoming shows or anything else you'd like to do?
Tomorrow night is The Art of Seduction, and I believe Naomi's running it. Is that correct, Ben?
I believe. Is it Naomi?
I don't know.
I thought it was Gray. I guess we'll find out.
It's Naomi or Gray. Let's put it that way. I don't know. I'd have to like go and check it out, and it's a little late for that. Followed by Headliner's Ball, which who is Jeremy headlining tomorrow night or Thursday morning?
Well, tomorrow Jeremy will be actually out of town, busy with work, so it'll be me and Stelina, and we are headlining, Sam Sampson and Marriott Musings.
Nice. Okay, and other than that, then we have In Our Craft and Still in Art, I believe, on Thursday, and that will be followed by Break Lunch with Pam. I'm not sure what Richard's topic is either, so I hopefully will find out. I don't know.
Shakespeare,
there you go. Well, there's a good one. And then that'll be you and break on through then after that on Friday morning. And, yeah, and then we're into Friday and you're all stuck with me again. You know. As much of a break as we can all get from me is a blessing. So, anyway, that's about it. Sums it all up. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Laurent. Thank you, Gavin, for calling in. Thanks, Pam. Wonderful show. Great topic. You know, great poetry all the way through. So great reads, great comments, and a great night. So hope everybody has a great rest of the week. Only how great and rest began. But hey, you know. And Gavin and company, take care. The company was very quiet. Good night.